Dr. Google can't fix your knee. The Joint Relief Institute can. Fast joint pain relief, covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river. Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Yes, this is the Chicago Way. John Kess, Jeff Carlin, and our special guest for a second week in a row, Kristen McQuarrie. Good morning.
Good morning. You're very dressed up today, John Kess.
Yes, I am, because I'm going to meet a fellow of the Irish persuasion at a steakhouse where you generally start with martinis, but I have to finish my column first.
Oh, gosh. Do you guys need like a third wheel?
You might need someone
to translate some Gaelic for you
or something. There you go. No, I think he speaks elegant Chicago. There are, you know, he's a political guy, and Gene and Giorgetti's is a political bar and steakhouse, and this is the political season. So before we get into what the Irish soda bread tastes like at your house, we have an election. I ran into Joe Pito. He's the founder and owner of the Chia franchise.
Oh, I'm familiar.
Remember he did the Obama Chia heads?
Chia.
And Obama, happy Obama, and the determined Obama.
Right.
He had to do two. And then some people said it was racist, and he had to, like, take the Obama heads down.
What was racist about it?
I don't know. It was sort of like,
Chia resembled curly African-American hair, I believe, and people took that as being
nonsense.
Yeah, it was nonsense.
It's like... they all have, you know, now they have a Donald Trump Chia, a Marco Rubio. They're thinking about what are they going to do now. They got Donald Trump, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, and John Kasich.
Wow.
So you can't make all four.
Well, and the Chia is going to have to come in with some nice hair gel.
For
a Marco Rubio. We got to do the part way over. We can't do that curly look for.
Then you have to sit him on a big throne with his legs sticking out, with just tiny little feet. And then on the other side, you have the Hillary Clinton Chia. I'm looking at the prototype, and the Bernie Sanders looks like Bernie.
Yeah,
you
know,
kind of
mm-hmm.
had that like little fro thing going. The Hillary looks kind of like a 1970s version of Stevie Nicks in you know, with the frizzy
Let me
hair.
See that.
It's Stevie Nicks, Hillary Clinton, Stevie Nicks with green hair. I can't wait.
Oh my gosh, you're right. It's sort of a poodle look.
Kind of perm.
It's
like a
permed.
Major permish. There's no racism here, okay? That's just how chias grow.
Right.
Sure.
Looks like alfalfa sprouts.
All right, so
nothing you can do about
the question for Mr. Pito and for everyone else is who's going to be the Republican nominee?
Big night for Donald Trump again.
The other night,
Cruz is catching up a little bit, mm-hmm. but he could catch him. You know, if something happened, you know, in the next couple of days where Marco Rubio actually got out, if the numbers in Florida look like they're going to embarrass him, I could maybe see that happening where he would step aside and ask his voters to, you know, vote instead for mm-hmm. Cruz. But, I mean, Donald Trump winning Michigan, this is hard. You know, this was kind of a real test of the Midwest and the Midwest vote that normally would go to someone like a Hillary Clinton. So to me, it kind of shows that there could be those crossover voters like you were talking about mm-hmm. in Boston. Because in Michigan, you have a lot of union workers, very blue-collar workers. It's a diverse state. And so for Trump to win over someone like John Kasich...
Overwhelmingly.
Says a lot about this runaway Trump train.
Part of the feature of this podcast, The Chicago Way, is that we talk about like how we're writing columns at the moment, right? And people can read them later. And you're writing too, and I'm thinking of a story that might show up in the paper. I love the fact that the Republican establishment either has to soil their pants and wear Depends because of Donald Trump, or they have to get on their knees and crawl over the dead broken body. Think of Ben-Hur, you know, the dead broken body of Marco Rubio to kiss Ted Cruz's feet and say, "Please, Ted, we loathe you, but please save us."
How about that?
What do you think, Jeff? Isn't that dramatic?
It's very dramatic. I think.
But isn't it going on though?
It absolutely is going on. It's this Trump thing is just mind-boggling. I mean, at the last numbers I saw, that Trump is picking up like 50% of the vote in most places where that's happening. And Ted Cruz is taking about 30%, just comparatively across what's happening. The math doesn't really support Ted Cruz, even if he picked up 10 points or 20 points from Rubio. It doesn't support that they would be able to take him down.
You knock Ted. I go to Kristen's side. You take Rubio and Kasich out. Kasich, get out anyway, because I just don't like a sniveling man. And he's always sniveling. He does that thing. And women came out of their kitchens to support me. That kind of stuff.
Right.
Shut up, dude.
And he's always, hand-wringing.
All right, so get those two out of there. The Hobbit with the ears. I don't know if he's a Hobbit or an elf. And Rubio. And then Kasich. Get him out of there. And then you have Trump and Cruz. You have a... economic nationalist, salesman, right? Big glitz, right? Mr. Trump. And on the other side, you have a constitutional conservative that the Republican fat cats hate. Who does the base go for then?
I mean, I don't even know how to describe the base anymore because I never would have guessed that the base would go for Donald Trump. But they're very motivated by immigration. That's why Marco Rubio is so far behind because he dared, compromise on his Gang of Eight proposal. I mean, I think the Trump supporters, by playing into that hand and trying to take basically the nomination away from Trump, they're motivating that base even more because that base is upset that the GOP establishment has ignored them for so many years.
What do we mean, guys, when we say the GOP establishment has ignored the grassroots? What does that mean?
I think it means that they have not advanced policies in Congress that people want to see. People want to see entitlement reform. They want to see, there are some people who want to see, Planned Parenthood defunded. All of these different issues that the candidates run on and then never fulfill, I think that's what people say when they're being ignored, that they're still doing, corporate welfare. They supported the Export-Import Bank, which a lot of people just believe is, giving big corporate tax breaks to the fat cats. And, then they're not voting on minimum wage, or there's just this big gap between what the Republican Party
stands for. Do they want to go to war? Do the people in the Republican base, I know in Bernie Sanders' camp not, but in the Republican base that's going for Trump, do the people want to go to war in the Middle East?
No. No way.
No, right?
Absolutely not.
Is that why the...
But they want us to have a huge military infrastructure, but they don't want us to use it. They don't want anybody to die.
They just want to get jobs. They just want money in their pocket, mm-hmm. right? They want money either from buildup in military, which means jobs and money, or some other means, right? Trade war.
I mean, I think that they are more hawkish on targeted airstrikes. I don't know necessarily that anyone is openly advocating for boots on the ground, but I think Trump did say that at some point. So
you can't defeat ISIS without it. I mean,
he has said that he would bomb the crap out of them and then put boots on the ground to secure oil fields. I mean, that's essentially his whole
plan. And take the oil. Nationalize the oil and take it for us, even though it doesn't make...
Right, and he would bring his buddies at Exxon and Mobil and all of them to come in and run it and make us billions of dollars. That's what he said.
Mm-hmm.
But it's impossible.
There's something to be said, isn't there, for a neocolonial power just acting like one? Let's just colonize these areas and take their resources and treat their people like crap.
Well, that's what
and
China
take their stuff.
Is doing in Africa. So
right,
we're afraid of that.
No, I'm not really advocating. I know being
you're
not. Facetious.
No, I know that because you're a Rand Paul guy.
Yes,
and as am I, a gal, because he is less hawkish and he is more reasoned and talked when he was a candidate more about how we endanger ourselves more by being so, by invading these countries. And we that is not the safer route that,
although
Americans should take.
There are people in the old Republican establishment wing, I mean the George W. Bush wing, who are now going to Hillary or they're playing the hated Hitler card on Trump, which I find to be cheap. But I see it being done even in the pages of the great American newspapers, one in particular. I'm really skating on thin ice here, but I'll just be very careful. I read a piece by a very well-written piece by Mr. Kagan the leading neocon and defender of, you know, Iraq war policy and so forth. And he was ripping on Trump as the end of, you know, it's the end of the Republican Party. It's the end of civilization as we know it. Not one place in that op-ed or even below it in italics did I read that Mr. Kagan is a neocon who supported wars and hates Trump. I never saw that. I don't know if I expect that. Should I?
I don't think so.
I shouldn't expect it? I think I should, but no one wants to say
No one wants to disclose.
That would be rude.
Right, that would be rude.
But, I mean,
rude.
Everyone who's in the game knows who he is. So mm-hmm. it's just, you know. I just find it convenient. What's not in the story is always the story to me.
Right.
Is that a conspiracy note?
No. I think that's your journalist background.
Your tinfoil hat. A little bit tinfoil.
No, I don't think so. It comes from the neocons, and many of them are my friends, and I like them. But
you know. And as a good writer, you try to find holes in your own arguments and in your own stories before they go to print. And so you were just reading into the holes.
Here's one problem that we have as doing the podcast before something happens. Will Louis Gutierrez be arrested, as I think he wants to be, at the Trump rally on this past Friday?
He does want to be.
Oh, he will be. I think it's going to get canceled.
You do?
I do.
Because it's too... There's too much hype.
There is a letter, and of course this is just a letter, but a very long letter going around at UIC being presented to faculty and staff saying, right. Hey, please sign this. It's a letter to the chancellor saying...
Who wrote it? Bill Ayers?
Could have
and
been.
And his seven-figure pension or whatever.
Could have been. I wouldn't be surprised. It did smell mm-hmm. of his literary styling. Mm-hmm. But
It starts out, I dream of my father?
Exactly.
Didn't he write that too?
I was a poor black man growing mm-hmm. up. Yeah.
Right.
But they've got over 500 over 250 faculty already. And this was just as of yesterday, or the day before mm-hmm. we taped. And they were livid about this, saying it's dangerous, you're drawing bad attention to us, you're getting people going to be protesting, it's just going to be a bad idea all around. And this is not what we want on our campus.
And it's on a Friday,
yeah.
So nobody has to, you know, behave or be up early, mm-hmm. and so the alcohol factor, I think, is weighing into some people's concerns as well.
I think that Donald Trump should be able to speak just like anyone mm-hmm. else, and for Chicago to shut down freedom of speech...
Wouldn't be the first time.
Would be interesting, wouldn't it? I mean, I don't think it should happen. I think if you have something to say, say it. I don't care who you are. Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's
whoever
it's
you want.
Absolutely,
just
John.
Speak.
And look at how, I mean, you have to hand it to the Chicago police and how they, I mean, we were able to have mostly peaceful protests over Laquan McDonald and other issues
and
NATO where people are allowed to express themselves.
Right.
I'm all for a good protest. Either side.
If I were Chicago Democratic boss, and we have to get into the boss Madigan in a bit, but if I were a Chicago Democratic boss, the last thing I'd want is a serious discussion on immigration policy, given that African Americans form the bulwark, the basis of the Democratic Party, at least in Chicago, in Illinois. And if there are no African Americans in it, there's no Democratic Party. Let's just state the truth. So an honest discussion of immigration policy, here we go, another, yeah, I'm skating on thin ice, but this is how it is, would entail an examination of African-American attitudes toward unfettered immigration across the southern border in the context of competing for jobs, because our schools and our institutions are corrupt and have failed many of the African-American students and children in this city. We know this. Many are not trained or prepared to succeed in college, and many drop out. I think what are the dropout rates?
For black students,
yeah.
it's high. I don't know the number.
Single
but...
digits graduate from college. That's how bad it is.
Right, percentages. Mm-hmm.
So you have people competing at low skilled jobs with other people competing in low-skilled jobs.
Right? I mean, it's a pretty open division that is, I mean, we saw it in our mayor's race where to win the Chicago mayor's race and that runoff, Chuy Garcia needed to do well in black wards.
And they didn't come out for him.
So, I think he did okay. I have to go back and look at the numbers.
I don't think he did as well as he had to, right, or he would have won.
And it's because of this inherent friction between those groups.
So here's a question, a newspaper journalism question in this context. I'll posit that Republican establishment types don't want to talk about immigration in this context because they are beholden to the interests that want cheap labor to go cut, you know, Tyson chicken, big plants, Iowa packing, that kind of thing. They want to be able to tell the guy, no, I don't like you, or you're not working hard enough, get lost. And I'm only paying you $6 an hour or $8 or whatever. On the other side, you have Democrats who don't want to talk about it because what are they going to say? That they're advocating bringing in more low-skilled labor to compete with their political base? In the communities, you see a tension between an understandable acknowledgement that, like, if you're like a guy I talked to, did I talk about this last week? A guy I talked to at a homicide scene on the west side, he had to take three buses to get to Elgin. He's a black guy, and he said, I'm the last black guy at my factory in Elgin.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there is an antipathy, or at least tension, that neither side, neither establishment side, wants to discuss.
Right.
But it's out there, as you mentioned, as it was manifested in the
mayor's race. Yeah. I mean, I think there's also a human element where the Republican Party keeps ignoring the fact that, you know, they have this law and order group too. So it's not just the competition over low wage labor. It's this principled constitutional stance that if you break the law, you should not be allowed to be a citizen or have a path to citizenship or anything. And so these people who broke the law and then are thriving and helping our economy.
Buying buildings?
Well,
in Chicago, they're illegal. Can I even say it anymore? That's the legal term, illegal aliens. But
you can
what
say
do
it,
we
you
say?
Say
no, we changed it.
No, undocumented workers. I mean.
No, but see, that's different. That's another tip. That's a media thing. We don't say illegal alien. That's the legal definition. We don't use it in media. We say
that's
undocumented
right.
workers, which is a different thing altogether. If there's different political layering on top of that. But whatever it is, what?
I'm just perpetually disappointed with the Republican Party that there has not been more outreach to this group and more effort to recognize and humanize this issue. We are breaking apart families. We are shipping people back home
like
and
Trump
disrupting
wants to do. Right.
their lives. And these are human beings. And so for me, as a Catholic, that disturbs me. And I think there's a big hole in the Republican argument when they're so tied to that law and order stance that they're unwilling to solve what is a huge problem in this country. And that is this whole underclass of people. What is it up to now? 13 million people?
Whatever maybe much more.
Who are, you know, not paying taxes and not part of
they're paying
society.
Taxes,
paying taxes
their checks
though,
are just not got, they're just not getting credit for it.
Right. Well, that's an interesting thing too, is that a lot of that money just sits in the Treasury because they can't legally disperse it to anybody, but they get taxed because they're still paying.
Well, clearly,
paid.
As a son of immigrants to this country, I with one foot in the 21st century and the other in the 17th century.
You skip a few centuries.
Right. Well, because it's the hill country. It's the mountains in Greece, okay, in the Peloponnesus. But I understand. I have an empathy, right? But at the same time, I also understand the argument that if we don't have a border, if we don't have a common culture, we have nothing. As you can see, look at Holland, Europe. Look what's going on there with their immigration problem. So I'm torn. Mm-hmm. I don't want to kick anybody out of the country, but I see the argument. Because without laws, what are we? Maybe we should let Mike Madigan be our boss.
Mind a suggestion, friend? Trouble with you is you don't enjoy the game for its own rewards. Stimulation, relaxation, pleasant association, and the interesting conversation.
Shut your mouth.
Il gisait sur le sable du désert, sa main serrant un revolver. Une balle dans le dos, je le croyais mort. Le plomb près du cœur fait sans son corps, mais il respirait. Et dès de mon couteau, ce soir-là, je sauvais le pauvre Ringo.
Ringo.
All right, so Mike Madigan, John Cass is on the wrong side of history, apparently, because I have colleagues in the newspaper and others in TV telling me that I'm wrong for thinking that President Barack Obama would reach down from his Olympian height to go all the way into an obscure state rep race primary, reach down and pluck Julia Stratton, the candidate that's running against Ken Duncan, mm-hmm. and endorse her with commercials. My take is, who's the beneficiary? The beneficiary of that is Mike Madigan, the boss, because he wants to keep his supermajority, and Ken Duncan broke with him, so he must be punished. So I look at who's the beneficiary, and I think that it's better to give, if I were Mike Madigan, would you want a turkey or a ham off the back of a ward boss's truck, or would you rather have the big boss endorse Julia Stratton for you?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's going to be much harder for Ken Duncan to win that seat when you have the president of the United States right. cutting commercials for your opponent. It was going to be a tough race anyway. Now it's going to be more difficult. And I just find it odd that he would consider this little race to be so important. He's the president of the United States, and he took time out to cut commercials. So there's a couple things. One, Ken Duncan not only is not giving Madigan his supermajority, he embarrassed him. He has humiliated him. He has held press conferences talking about how Madigan runs the House like a plantation.
Which he does.
I mean,
it probably put all his Madigan's pet news people in a tizzy or whatever they are, the bloggers, you know what I mean, down there. They're all, oh,
yeah,
my God, Mike,
yes.
How dare you question the speaker?
Right. And right? It's not so much, it's not explicit. It's all implicit.
Yeah.
The House rules dictate that you can't get a bill out of the House rules unless Mike Madigan says so. So it's not that he walks around and taps lawmakers on the shoulder and tells them how to vote. He just, it's a groupthink environment down there. You rely on Madigan's staff. You can't get your bills out unless you are smooching up to him. So that's the plantation mentality. And also, Mike Madigan was not helpful to Obama when he was running for U.S. Senate. He actually backed somebody else in that race.
Danny Hines, I believe.
Dan Hines, correct. But then he came around when Obama was running for president. You'll recall, we moved our primary from March to the first week in February. I believe it was February 6th of 2008. In order to help give Obama a boost and those delegates. That was a big favor to Obama that now Obama perhaps feels this is his payback.
That's at State House Chick, by the way, so that's why Kristen's mm-hmm. got the insight on all of this on Twitter. Check her out. I think you kind of nailed it there, and I think it's a shame that someone like Duncan, who is going against what is being profited by Madigan, I think that's interesting, and I think it's a shame that he's being essentially knocked for it.
Well, let's not make any mistake. There aren't any angels in this thing.
No.
Okay.
Looking
for virtue in politics is like looking for it in a brothel. Okay. You're not going to find it. And so now they put out a hit piece on Duncan. I know this from reading my Facebook postings of that column on Madigan and Obama. People are weighing in. Oh, he's a wife beater or something. Duncan's terrible. He hits women. And then I found out during the back and forth on Facebook that it was a Brendan Riley piece put out against Duncan. Who's Brendan Riley? I like you, Alderman, but I know that if Mike Madigan says, jump.
I need your help.
I need your help. You're going to jump, big guy. You know,
he did.
He's a Madigan guy.
And he has higher aspirations. Mm-hmm. And at some point, he's going to need help from the speaker. So, yes, he sort of laid on the sword and put out the first hit piece against Duncan, which actually is true. Duncan was arrested and had a couple of orders of protection against him that he violated. This was back in the 90s. If you believe in second chances, he has since had a clean record. But it did happen.
But they will find anything in your background, just like Madigan's doing on this kid, Jason Gonzalez, and putting out every day another mailing.
They'll even find stuff that's not in your background. I mean, during the last election cycle, and the Republicans are doing it too, so I don't want to make it so one-sided, but Will Guzzardi, who is a state rep, very progressive, he beat Tony Barrios in the last election. She
was daughter
of the then Board of Review chairman, now assessor for Cook County.
And chairman of the Cook County Democrats, Joe Barrios.
Right. Will Guzzardi was running against her. Mike Madigan always protects his incumbents, so he was protecting Tony Barrios. He put out a mailer that implied that Will Guzzardi was a sexual predator. You know, it had like creepy photos, and, mm-hmm. and I don't even want to get into how he linked this all together. But I mean, there is no floor with these guys. They will keep stooping and stooping and stooping until they, you know, make their point. Will Guzzardi still won, and now he's in the House, and I don't hear him.
Did he vote against Madigan to be Speaker?
No.
That was my problem with Will. When I talked to him, I'm like, you're going to vote for Madigan for Speaker.
After he did that.
You don't know that. Of course he does. Because if you don't, as State House Chick just informed us again, if you don't, you're nobody. You're out of the hive. You're like a little drone in the winter. Wait, you know, I can't get into the hive. Please keep me warm.
Knock, right? Knock, let me in. And it's not even actually a vote. People think it's a roll call vote. Most sessions, it is a voice vote, you know, all in favor of House Speaker or Michael Madigan for House Speaker say, I oppose, nay, the ayes have it. House, you know, no roll call. So if you want to stand up and make a stink, you could, but it's not a roll call.
You're behind, as they say. You're behind. Jeff Carlin.
Yeah.
That's how we roll in this state.
Chicago way.
It's the Chicago way.
It sounds to me like you've been reading too much John Cass.
I have to break with an important announcement. The Chicago Tribune, in its wisdom, has now put a link. Usually I put the Chicago Way and our special guest, Christian McQuarrie, at the bottom of the column. And I suppose I will keep doing that until you give in and do this all the time. but now the Tribune is running a what do they call that? A related?
Related content.
Related content right up higher so people can see it and click on and get the Chicago Way podcast. What do you think, Jeff?
I love it.
I saw that.
What am I to make of that? Because the only thing I cared about is the clicks.
Right.
So I talked to the guys in the CT.com and I said, who gets the credit for the clicks?
Right. Right? What did they say?
I said, you do. I'm like, okay.
Okay, good.
I'm cool then. Isn't that how journalism, it sucks, right, that we have to think in those terms?
That's the modern way.
Okay, that's our public service announcement. Now, for our other one, Kristen McQuarrie's house for St. Patrick's Day, what's that going to be like?
Come on over. Southside Irish Parade is Sunday. I live two blocks off of the route. It used to be very rowdy, as you know, and the year that they decided to cancel the parade, I could see why. It was a very warm day. You got all these buses of kids from the north side coming down, school buses with no bathrooms, and they're drinking all the way down the Dan Ryan.
What are they going to use? Evergreens?
By the trees in my yard. And, you know, that's why a lot of my neighbors actually rent little porta potties, because you have all these people wandering around, and that way they're
from
not
the porta potty king of Orland Park. That guy,
so funny. My daughter, when she was about three, she said, "I love the Southside Irish Parade. You always know it's here when you see the blue bathrooms."
So it was. It did get bad.
It got really bad. That year, somebody got in a scuffle with the police, and it was on video. Well, there was just one that was on tape. And that was on the news, and, you know, it just reflects badly on the neighborhood, because I live there. I can promise you it's not the people who live there who are starting fights. It's people who come from everywhere, the southwest suburbs, the north side. So now what they do is, you are not allowed to come, from what I've heard, you have to have a bus that has restrooms on it. You're not allowed to come in just at any area. You have to come down a certain route and park your bus.
Stop by Jansen's and have a hot dog or whatever it's called now. It's still Jansen's?
Jansen's is still there. And you are not allowed to drag your cooler up to the parade route. You know, in the old days, you'd bring a cooler, you'd sit, you'd watch the parade.
Why would you want to spend all that money to own a bar if people could bring their cooler and own booze?
Oh, the bars were just they're overflowing, and they still are. All the bars along Western
Avenue. Do people do the Walk of Death on St. Patrick's Day? Tell us what the Walk of Death is for those people, suburbanites, who don't know the Walk
of
Death.
John, it's called the Irish Pub Crawl.
Okay, I remember Tuna Carey calling it the Walk of Death, but all right.
There are just a lot of bars lining.
95th Street?
Yeah, a little bit south of 95th is the first bar, and then it goes all the way to probably Stadium Club, which is almost to a little past 115th Street. So
the idea is you stop in and have a drink at every place on the way.
Correct.
I can't imagine doing that. Now that I'm in my dotage and I have, you know, my watered wine as I sit by the fire, I can't imagine.
You are much too distinguished Irish pub crawl.
I've done it, actually, but not on St. Patrick's Day.
Right. I did it in the old days, and I think I made it to bar number 6 or something.
Kristen,
right.
Stop!
That was it. Yeah.
Right. Well, I think it's a great day to have a Italian saint like St. Patrick celebrated by all the Irish on the south side and throughout the city, right? Wasn't he Italian? I think.
I believe so, yeah.
But he was also the patron saint of slaves, of people that need help, and he drove the dragons or whatever out of Ireland.
Ireland, that's right. You used to come down and hang out at Frankenello's before the parade, didn't you?
Yeah.
I remember that because when I was a little nobody in my previous life, I went there too because that's where you would catch up with all the politicians
Jeremiah.
And I remember seeing
all
you
the
there.
Boys, mm-hmm. Yeah, the pickle and all the guys. There,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And Frankenello's was run by, what's his name, Nello Sabatini.
Nello and Frank.
Nello was in charge, I think the last time I remember him, he was in charge of the Bureau of Science and Signage, which put out, now that he's not there anymore, somebody put out they misspelled Illinois or something?
And northbound, yes.
Was that you?
That wasn't me. No, I didn't get it. GNTV's noticed it.
Explain this.
I don't remember the exact.
Not Nello's fault.
By no means. Different department, I believe, doing that now.
Mm-hmm.
But as part of the Western Overpass, you know, they're tearing that down. The word southbound was missing an H. So
oh, no.
We speak. Southbound.
Maybe
not even a, just S O U B.
Yeah, whatever. Really? No U, and it was just bad. So it was southbound.
That's awesome.
And Illinois was just spelled L-I-L-L. INOS.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. One of the first times I ate at Frankenello, real quick story. We had just bought our house down there and we took my in-laws out to dinner. And it's a nice Italian restaurant, delicious food. But we sit down and the waiter comes over and he's telling the specials and he's basically telling us like what's on sale. He used those words. Well, we got the catfish today. It's on sale. It's usually $24.99. Today it's $18.99. Or you can have the blah, blah, blah. It's on sale.
The
and I
tilapia.
Kept thinking, right, yeah. I'm not sure I want on sale. Clearance tilapia.
Come on now. I'm just thinking, telling you, it's like, you know, it's cheaper. Get it now.
Only
on
the special.
South side. What else is going on, Jeff Carlin?
Illinois primary. Well, by this time it goes up, we'll be looking at.
What are you doing Tuesday, guys? What are you doing Tuesday, the Illinois primary? What are you planning on doing?
I mean, to me, the primary or any election day is sort of like the Super Bowl. I'm really revved up. I love it. So I'm working all day.
What deadlines?
I will probably start writing after the polls close. We'll have something on the editorial page about the results that will change a few times during the night. You know, I'll have one version and then I'll update it and probably be in the building until midnight or so.
How about you, Jeff? You'll be on with Ro and Anna?
Yep, we'll be doing some coverage of it. And, of course, Justin Kaufman will pick up the heavy lifting once the polls close.
What's he going to do? Like the leftist commie view?
I'm joining him for a segment.
Nice. I like this kid.
It won't be all lefty.
Come on.
It'll be good.
He might change his mind.
Super Tuesday, he had Tony Preckwinkle sit in.
Really? Boss Preckwinkle?
Boss Preckwinkle. And it was all decided before the polls even closed. I mean, there was very little after time. And so polls close 7 o'clock, 7:15, 7:20. They know everything now. And so it was just like a half hour of them being like, well, so things happened, huh?
How's your shoes, Tony?
Yeah. Exactly.
You like those socks?
I mean, it was good. She's obviously interesting to talk to, and she's
okay.
He enjoyed it for sure.
Let's put this now. The Tuesday primary in Chicago is about two things in Illinois: Rauner and Madigan, and whatever future Rahm thinks he has, which he doesn't, and Tony Preckwinkle.
Yeah, I mean, Tony Preckwinkle is going to be a big winner because she is so she so closely aligned herself and has been supporting Kim Fox for state's attorney, for Cook County state's attorney. And it's, you know, I would be surprised if Kim Fox did not win. And so that's a big night for her. Rahm has been pretty quiet. I mean, I know he's got to have his little fingers in some of these races, but I haven't seen too much of Rahm as much as your initial. This is a referendum on Rauner, really. Madigan,
even though it's a Democratic primary.
Well, it's both.
I know, but...
Right, you're right. There are some Republican races, too.
Right.
But this is, you know, Madigan is soiling up candidates he doesn't like by putting out mailers, you know, with them side by side with Rauner.
Mm-hmm.
So he's really making the governor an issue in this race. And if Madigan beats Rauner in a lot of those seats, a big setback for our freshman rookie shake-it-up Springfield governor.
Well, he had Rauner... some guy who has been around politics for a while laid this out for him in a newspaper column that you might know of, in which he said, you have to first, not that I want it done, I'm just saying if you're going to be serious about this, you have to take out Joe Berrios as committeeman in the 31st Ward. Because remember, you mentioned the Gazzardi race,
yes,
and all that. Berrios had been weakened. He'd been weakened by two or three losses in a row.
Correct.
So you take him out so he can't be the chairman of the party in Cook County and therefore can't help Mike. That's number one. Number two, better get a real good candidate to go up against Madigan in his own district to hold him there while you're spending truckloads of cash in other areas, particularly in the suburbs, to knock down the suburban Republicans. Well, we know that he didn't do the first thing. He let Berrios slide. But the second two, has he done that with the third thing? Rauner and the suburban races. Has he done enough out there to weaken Madigan or at least put a dent there? Or do you think he hasn't?
He's trying, and that's what we'll find out. There are a couple of races where Rauner is, or his people, are putting money behind reform-minded Democrats,
right,
who might challenge Madigan. And one of them, it's another Berrios race where it's a Berrios candidate running against a reform-minded. So that's an example. There are those kind of sprinkled
Which
around
one?
The state.
Do you remember?
Angelica, I can't remember. It's a Northwest Side district, and it's Omar Aquino who ran for 36th Ward alderman, and got in a runoff but lost. And he's Berrios's guy running against.
It's like his godson or somebody like that, right?
You know what? People said they were related, but they are not.
But they're friends. Their families are friends from the old country.
Yes,
or something,
and
right?
He backed him in the aldermanic race, and he's backing him heavily here. It's Angelica Alfaro.
Right.
That's a race that's kind of a Rauner versus Madigan race, and there are a few others, and some of them downstate. So, though we will see if Rauner's money actually
and
helps.
if Rauner's political, because Rauner has money, and so does Ken Griffin and all the other guys. But if they're taking a political advice only from the sort of the guys who made Mark Kirk into the political titan that he is. We might find somebody might learn a lesson politically, because there's nobody more prepared, more driven than Michael Madigan that I've ever seen. And right now, at the end of his career, he's what, 72? Is he, what was that, the last hurrah, like James Patrick Curley? Is this kind of like, are we getting to the, you know, with the theme of the St. Patrick's Day, diddly D music? I'm going to watch the quiet man like I always do and cry. Especially when he, you know, when he says there'll be no fences between us, Kathleen, or whatever he says. During that time, with all this going on, is Mike Madigan, is this the last hurrah for him, do you think?
Gosh, it's hard to say. I think if Lisa Madigan wants to run for governor, he has to step aside. She made that pretty clear last time. She was exploring a run. She said she, you know, couldn't if he was going to continue in the House. Others say, you know, he's never going to retire. That's just not in his DNA. So I don't know. I don't see him winding down. There's no, you know, visible signs of it.
But no king ever leaves a successor.
He certainly has not.
It just can't. It's like an outfit boss leaving. As soon as you do, you're going to end up at Denny's Deli in the trunk of a car. You know, I mean, that's what happens. Not that Denny's Deli is not a good place, but I'm just saying that's what happens. Jeff Carlin, any thoughts on Kim Kardashian's nakedness?
Only that Bette Midler has still got it and Kim Kardashian has got nothing.
I did have to do some research for this segment and did have to Google Kim Kardashian naked selfie.
I'm sure it didn't come up with anything.
Doesn't she look like a pre-Columbian fertility statue?
Yes,
okay,
she does.
Can I get myself in big trouble? I'm just one guy, okay? All right, one guy. But I'm just saying that whole Kim Kardashian look, is that how far I can go here?
This is a podcast. You could go a little further.
Okay, the whole big butt thing.
Doesn't do it for you.
What? You, Jeff?
Overstated, yeah. No, it's overdone.
It's overdone, right? I mean, first of all, it doesn't look healthy to me. It doesn't. I'm sorry. It looks like me, but without a big butt. I got a big belly. It's like eating, a lot of Pepsi, you know, and beer.
I'm sauces. Under the suspicion that she's had her posterior altered.
Did she have do you think that they would have put sheaths in there or something or filled it with some sort of?
You think she's had it enlarged?
I do.
Or you do?
I do.
It does look unnatural.
It does.
Waist and the shelf sticking out there?
Just the size of it.
Yeah. I know.
The size is just.
And I think I've read maybe one of the younger sisters had some padding added.
Yeah.
What does that mean? Okay, Jeff, can you put your intellectual hat on for a second, please? What does it mean when the ideal feminine form, at least in some areas of America, not mine, but in some, involved this pre-Columbian fertility goddess look? What does that mean politically? What does that mean?
I'm not sure the politics.
I want you to plumb the depths of this.
Oh, jeez. I might have to do some research on that, John.
No, but seriously. Now, okay, I'll ask Kristen.
How does it affect the politics?
It doesn't affect our. It's not going to. Look, whether she has a big butt or not, it's not going to make a difference for Mike Madigan ruling the state. But in terms of our cultural, the way we identify beauty and define beauty, what the heck happened? People are sticking, foam in their butt and making it big? What happened? I don't get it.
So much has happened. I mean, we modesty is not appreciated anymore. And when I looked up Kim Kardashian selfie naked, I actually was not expecting to see all these nudie pictures of her. I didn't realize she had put herself out there often enough that, you know, my computer screen was full of different pictures.
I noticed that you had to say I was researching.
It was for research. Of course.
Absolutely.
Of course.
Anybody's asking.
I'm just amazed that the ideal of beauty, you know, to me is my wife and then nothing else.
Right.
Okay? But
that's the way it should be.
It's not. I just don't get it, man.
Yeah.
I just don't get, maybe, what, am I a middle-aged white guy? I can't get it?
No. It's the same reason Donald Trump is so popular.
I don't get that either.
Exactly.
Whoa.
Where did you go?
Visionaries,
from big butts to that. How do you get there? What's the bridge of size that you're going to cross here?
Okay, so bear with me. So it's the whole reality TV, instant gratification sort of thing that is driving their popularity and his popularity. She is, you know, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. You can talk to her, tweet at her, and she's always active. And she gives people what they want, which is what? Scandal.
Eye candy. That's it. I mean, she is
to look at here, okay? This is not Sophia Loren, all right?
No, that's...
It's not Elizabeth Taylor. It's not...
Well, they actually had talent. I mean, I am...
Yeah.
The
Julia
idea
Roberts
that,
and Pretty Woman. I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her. I mean, one of the best lines... Or maybe from another movie.
Notting Hill.
That's it. Notting Hill. Sorry.
I gotcha.
Sorry, yeah.
I hear you. Yeah, no, it's such a terrible reflection on our country that these are our people who we elevate, and they're on the cover of People magazine, and they're wealthy, and they are just materialistic, vacuous human beings who put foam in their butts.
And it expresses itself in our music, in our writing, even in our journalism. I see references to body parts and things that in newspapers that I would never countenance or even want, you know, but I see it happening.
Oh, yeah, we've crossed a lot of lines that...
We got John Cass to talk about someone's butt size. I mean, that alone.
I'm just talking about Kim Kardashian's gigantic posterior as a political issue.
As a reflection of our culture.
Exactly.
I think is
it is, since I led you folks on this Socratic path, it is the debasement of a bourgeois culture that we're seeing the expression of which in our politics, like Trump, in our writing about body parts, in our music about just the most vulgar, misogynistic subjects. And all of that is common to societies and cultures that are ill and faltering. And historians would tell you that, but then again, if I would talk like a historian, I would be stepping outside my stereotype. So for another week of the Chicago Way, come back, and maybe Kristen will come back again. Will you, Kristen?
Only if we talk about more, you know, Kim Kardashian, reality TV.
Butt sizes.
Rear ends. Yes.
Okay, got it. For Jeff Carlin, Kristen McQuarrie, State House Chick, and me, John Cass, this has been the Chicago Way.